This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Dashran Johan. A poll by the Merdeka Center indicates that 69% of Malaysians approve of Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's run as the Prime Minister, and that the Perikatan National Government is also well-received compared to other parties or coalitions in the country. So, just some quick background information about the survey that was done. A total of 3,415 respondents age 21 and above were interviewed via telephone. Respondents were selected through a random stratified sampling method along the lines of ethnicity, gender, age, and also states. And the survey respondents are from all states and constituencies across the country, which of course includes Sabah and Sarawak. So what we're going to be doing today is dissect this study and discuss what it really means for our political landscape. But as always, I can't do this alone. So joining me on Zoom is Dr. Francis Hutchinson, who is a political analyst and the co-ordinator of the Malaysia Studies Program at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute. Hello, Francis. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Very well. Thank you very much for inviting me.
All right. So first of all, what are your overall thoughts on the study?
Okay, well, first thing I'd say is, of course, it is a survey that yields a lot of very interesting results. But we do need to exercise a degree of caution when we deal with surveys in general and those carried out in Malaysia in particular. So if we go back in time to 2018, the general election that took place that year, the polling results that were discussed in the media and the eventual results in the election were very different. Mm. And very, very few people correctly predicted the way that people were going to vote. And there were a number of reasons for this, notably that pollsters didn't know how to interpret the large number of respondents that said that they didn't know or didn't want to answer the question, as well as the real reluctance that many people had to sharing their voting intentions. So when we go back in time and listen to the results of focus group discussions, we look at Facebook paintings, then this kind of schizophrenia or duality becomes a bit clearer. But in this case, this is a survey, of course, with a relatively large number of respondents. And while we should be cautious in interpreting the results, I think we can use it to gauge the way that sentiments change over time. Hmm. So, for example, we have questions on the support for the government, whether the people think that the country is headed in the right direction, and what their main worries are. These sorts of issues and sentiments and how they evolve over time, I think, is something that this survey, particularly when you look at the series of surveys that the Merdeka Center comes out with, and it asks often the same type of question, you can see how things change over time. In addition, at this point, the number of people that say they don't know or they don't want to answer the question is much smaller this time around, indicating that people are feeling more secure in expressing their opinions. And consequently, we can be more confident in the picture that the survey is giving us.
Hmm. Okay, so that's exactly what we want to get into, right? The sentiments, we want to look at the patterns, even though, like as you mentioned, we cannot take these surveys as gospel. But the survey suggests that Perikatan Nasional is the most popular political party in the country right now. So 51% of the electorate are satisfied, followed by Barisan Nasional, which is about at 40%. PAS has about 39% who are satisfied with the party. Muafakat Nasional around 37%, and Bersatu at 28%, and Pakatan Harapan at what many might consider a surprising 25%. Why do you think people are generally satisfied with the Perikatan National Government?
I think that there are a number of dynamics at play. So the first two concern the handling of COVID-19. And the first in particular is not really to do with Muhyiddin Yassin, although it is associated with him, and that has certainly benefited him. And that concerns the overall handling of the pandemic from a public health point of view. So while people often talk about Malaysia's health system being under strain, it really responded very well to the COVID-19 crisis, from rolling out quarantine centers early in the early part of the year to organizing consistent briefings, to monitoring the movement of people. And this capacity in the Malaysian state is really structural, and it has been built up over the years. But due to timing issues, of course, it is associated with COVID. And this very good handling of the pandemic allowed the country to revert to normalcy and a long and deep economic slowdown that you're seeing other countries experiencing. While, of course, Malaysia is going through an economic contraction, it is less worse than it would be otherwise. The second aspect of COVID that has benefited him is one that is more directly related to him, and that is, of course, the rollout of different types of grants, handouts, and stimulus measures. And these are still being felt now and have been key in deadening the pain that many families would feel. The third aspect is Mohyeddin's seniority and experience. So he's a very experienced policymaker. He was mentor of Bizarre of Johor for 9 years. He's occupied senior federal positions, from the Minister of Education to being Deputy Prime Minister himself. And so while he doesn't kind of have the oratorical skills of someone like Mahathir or Anwar Ibrahim, he comes across as like a very steady hand at the tiller of government. And then relatedly is the very astute way that Mohyeddin assembled a cabinet that brought together seasoned policymakers from different parties. And this incorporated, UMNO, it incorporated Bersatu, PAS, and East Malaysian parties with many senior people, but also, you know, he avoided some of the more controversial placements that he could have made. Now, at the moment, you do have sniping from UMNO that perhaps it would be better from that someone from that party being PM, but you don't see this open rivalry that people saw between Mahathir and Anwar that really kind of plagued the second year of the Pakatan Harapan.
Right.
And last, I would signal the guilty verdict for Najib Razak. So, you've had this supposed resurgence of Najib as a popular figure, but the majority, the survey shows that majority of Malaysians support his conviction, including a majority of Malays. And this anger against Najib is what drove many people to vote against Barisan Nasional in the first place. And Mohyeddin, basically being able to point to this as an achievement is something that I think stands him in very good stead as well.
Okay, so you brought up Mohyeddin multiple times, right? So he's sort of the key figure. That's what I'm getting, that he's sort of the key figure behind Perikatan Nasional's popularity. And that is reflected in the survey as well. So the current Prime Minister, Tan Sri Mohyeddin Yassin, has an approval rating of 69%, according to Merdeka Center. And this is despite attempts by the opposition government post-Langkah Sheraton labelling Mohyeddin along with other defectors as party hoppers, pengkhianat, traitors. And why do you think Mohyeddin has remained relatively popular? You brought up COVID-19, you brought up, his seniority. Are there other factors?
Sure. So in addition to the things that we just talked about, I think, there are perceptions and issues that are important in the Malay heartland. So if you basically look at Malaysia's 222 electoral seats, parliamentary constituencies, you can divide them into four buckets. So the first one would be mixed seats, largely in urban areas on the peninsula. And there are about 48 seats. And these are areas where, Pakatan Harapan is very strong and actually was already strong in 2013. Then you have Malay majority seats, largely in rural areas, particularly on the east coast of the peninsula, but also just a little bit in from the west coast on the peninsula as well. And these, you've got 95 of these seats, right? And then you have 22 seats in the north that is more traditionally seen as past territory. And then you have about 57 seats in East Malaysia. So what happened in 2018 is that Pakatan Harapan was able to build on the seats that they had in the urban areas of the country and really make incursions into these rural Malay majority constituencies. But these constituencies, while they voted for Pakatan Harapan, they were not really so interested in reform issues. They were interested in cost of living issues, and they were interested in breaking the Najib Razak administration, really moving away from that. But it doesn't mean that they are insensitive to issues of the Malay community and so on, really. And so what Muhyiddin kind of offers this very important part of the country is continuity. He offers them a feeling of perhaps security, but also delivering on cost of living issues because of these stimulus measures, and also closure or the beginning of closure on the Najib Razak issue. So that is why I think we see quite a high level of popularity for him.
Okay, I do have another question about the current prime minister, but before we get into that specifically, I think we need to sort of set the tone about some of the other parties that are playing the political game right now. Why is Perikatan Nasional better received than Muafakat Nasional and Barisan Nasional, despite Perikatan Nasional as a whole mostly consisting of members of Muafakat Nasional, which is PAS and Barisan Nasional?
So I think that there are several dynamics at play. So the first one is that I think a majority of Malaysians, including Malay voters, like a multi-ethnic coalition in government. So now, as we just discussed, we know that in the second year of the Pakatan Harapan administration, there were rumblings that Malay voters and interests were not adequately taken into account or protected. So when you look at the structure and the leadership of Perikatan Nasional, it is, in essence, a Malay-led political grouping. You can't say it is dominated by a non-Malay party or by non-Malay figures. So this issue is addressed. But what distinguishes it from Barisan Nasional is that Barisan Nasional specifically is directly associated with UMNO, that for many people in the country has a number of senior leaders facing corruption charges. And this brings back memories of Najib Razak and the 1MDB issue, as well as, people like, UMNO party president Zahid, Kunan, and a range of other people, Pong Mokhtar in UMNO are also facing corruption charges. And then with regards to Muafakat Nasional, of course, this is very closely associated with PAS. PAS is an important member of this coalition. And while this does have support in many parts of the country, it is also viewed with extreme suspicion mixed urban areas, as well as much of East Malaysia, and even in some states like Johor, where electorally it doesn't do very well. So consequently, I think Perikatan Nasional comes across to voters now as a coalition that is more inclusive than Muafakat Nasional, but it doesn't have the baggage of Barisan Nasional, but it does have a secure Malay leadership.
Okay, so right now, as you alluded to earlier, there is certain infighting happening in Perikatan Nasional. And it does seem, at least, on the outside, that UMNO has a lot of power, or at least they're trying to exercise a lot of power. Given the results of this survey, during the stages where each coalition, the alliances, start announcing their prime minister candidate, will BN and PAS be forced to nominate Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin as their prime minister candidate in fear that if they don't, their alliance as a whole will lose popularity and lose votes?
So I think we come back to the same issue, and it is a question of timing. So if this goes to elections now, potentially you can make that argument. But if elections are called in a year's time or 2 years' time, then that's a different thing. And you have to see what is his potential popularity at that point in time. Now, certainly there are people in UMNO at the moment that are feeling very confident. And if anything, I would say probably UMNO is feeling more confident than PAS. PAS has less to gain. And if anything, it has more of an interest in having or retaining Bersatu in Muafakat Nasional, because it then is part of a coalition of three parties, and it can play off Bersatu and UMNO against each other. So I think also a PAS would be following a little bit more closely what Bersatu wants to do than what UMNO wants to do. The other part of your question is, you know, if UMNO is going to pick a prime ministerial candidate, who would it be? Hmm. And there we have to basically look inside UMNO. And UMNO at this point in time is quite a divided party. Yep. So you have a number of camps. So, of course, you have a Najib camp, you have a Zahid camp. These gentlemen at the moment, really, of course, Najib cannot stand for election at this point in time. But Zahid, you know, we know he has his corruption trial, and that is quite well advanced. Could it be Hishamuddin Hussein? Or then, you know, you open the box, would it be perhaps the more independent faction, the slightly more progressive, someone like Mohammed Hassan, or someone like Khalid Nordin, or even someone like Khairi Jalaluddin? So that there's a lot of discussion. And then, of course, you've got UMNO elections next year. So I'm not sure necessarily while they're feeling very confident at getting more parliamentary seats, I'm not sure necessarily that they are in a position to make a bid for the prime ministership. Now, what they may like to do is actually have an election and then see how many seats they have and then negotiate. And we may have a position, although, again, I repeat, this is unlikely, where we have Muhyiddin Yassin as more of a passive prime minister taking his orders from UMNO. And again, I don't think this is something he wants. Mm. So that is why I come back to the fact that I think for him, he will be resisting going to elections as long as possible.
Okay, we do need to head to a commercial break real quick. But when we come back, Dr. Francis and I will continue our discussion on the recent Merdeka Center survey, which suggests that Prime Minister Muhyiddin Yassin has an approval rating of 69%. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Darshan Johan, and zooming in is Dr. Francis Hutchinson, who's a political analyst and the coordinator of the Malaysia Studies Program at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute. And what we're doing today is looking at the findings of the recent survey done by Merdeka Center, which indicates that most Malaysians are pretty much satisfied with Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin as the Prime Minister of the country, as well as there is a overall satisfaction for the Perikatan National Government as well. So let's talk about racial politics. The survey also suggests that Malays are most satisfied with the federal government, which approximately 80% of them are. Both the non-Muslim Bumiputras and the Muslim Bumiputras are also pretty much very satisfied. The Chinese appear to be the only ones that seem to be incredibly dissatisfied, while the Indians seem split down the middle. So there's a lot to dive into here. So I guess, first of all, why is there such a huge difference between the perspectives of the Chinese and the Malays towards the federal government?
Sure. So, I mean, I think it has to do with several things. So in part, I think we discussed this a little bit before when I was talking about, you know, during the second year of the Pakatan Harapan administration, there was sort of, rumblings that Malay interests and so on were not being dealt with. But I think that there's another thing that comes in, and I don't want to say complicates the picture, but adds another layer that I think is important that we keep in mind. Mm. And that is that there is a geographic reason for the different perspectives. So, Chinese Malaysians and to a lesser extent, Indian Malaysians tend to live in urban areas. And this is changing, and I'll come back to this in a minute, but broadly, you have more Malays living in semi-urban and in rural areas. Mm. So when you just take this big bucket of ethnicity, in reality, you're actually picking up on two dimensions, which is ethnicity and geography. So if we were to then start looking at how Malay voters in the Klang Valley, in Johor Bahru and Penang think, then I think we would see that this ethnic perspective begins to look a little bit less clear, and you would see Malay voters in these areas beginning to show perspectives and opinions that are more similar to Chinese Malaysians. There would be less difference. Example for that is, why has, the Selangor state government been under Pakatan Rakyat and Pakatan Harapan for so long? And I think this kind of attests to the fact that there's a different mentality, different sorts of interests are prevalent in these areas. So we do know that Malaysians living in urban mixed seats overwhelmingly voted for Pakatan Harapan on a platform of reform that was not just about getting rid of Najib Razak, but improving the country's institutions and improving the quality of the country's democracies. And for these voters, Pakatan Harapan deserved a full term in government. And the manner in which the Perikatan Nasional government came to power, in that it was not voted in, and then it formed an alliance with UMNO, is unacceptable to them. Conversely, when we look at voters in the more rural Malay majority seats that voted for Bersatu candidates in 2018, it was really a vote of frustration against the cost of living, against GST, against Najib Razak. And issues of governance and accountability are a bit of less concern. So I think we need to kind of keep this in mind when we just, you know, look at the ethnic issues. There are other issues as well.
Okay, but is racial politics still an important, perhaps even some might say necessary strategy for politicians to use given the results of the study? Because, you know, while you did bring up the idea of a different layer, which is the urban-rural divide, the semi-urban area, there also does seem to be a clear racial divide, at least from the perspective of this study.
Political attitudes change over time. And there are windows of opportunity that sometimes political leaders take and sometimes they don't. So just after, you know, G14, and there was a little bit, I really wish there was more, but there's just a little bit of introspection in UMNO about why they lost and what they needed to do. There were some discussions, actually, looking at the fact that, you know, MIC, MCA had been decimated. People like Khairi Jamaluddin started saying, well, maybe we need to think about opening UMNO to people of other ethnicities. So imagine if you had, at that point in time, a real internal discussion within UMNO about where they went wrong, why they lost, and you had an opportunity for newer leaders to come up, and there was a new membership structure. Imagine if you fast forward today, what would the political discussion be like now? I think it would be very different. Now, we have to accept this moment was bypassed, and UMNO really took a rightward turn in a way that I think people did not expect. Again, we go back to, you know, 2018, there was no way that people would anticipate the sort of political landscape that we have today, where, you know, ethnicity is perhaps more salient than it has ever been before. But I think more than, you know, looking at your average Malaysian voter as someone that is preoccupied with ethnicity, I think we can look at the way that the country's political system works. And you have a system where there's an important degree of concentration of people of particular ethnicities in specific constituencies. Now, in part, this has to do with the geographic distribution of people that I just talked about, but also over time, when you've had redelineation exercises, there has been a move to kind of concentrate people of different ethnicities in different constituencies. And so what this does is it means that if you are a parliamentarian of a specific constituency, it is you in your interest to start talking in ethnic terms, because, you know, your constituency is either going to be predominantly Malay, it's going to be predominantly Chinese, or, you know, at the best, mixed, right? So this is going to structure the way you talk and the type of issues you look at. The second thing is, because of malapportionment, you have a lot of small, relatively sparsely populated parliamentary constituencies, in particularly the East Coast, but also a little bit in from the West Coast in Peninsular Malaysia. So this means that just by appealing to one constituency, by talking about ethnic issues, you get a huge amount of seats. So when I talked about the different buckets of seats a little while ago, I said there were 98 Malay majority peninsular seats that have traditionally voted for UMNO, right? So you add 22 where PAS is very, very strong, that are even more Malay majority. And wow, you've got 117 seats. That is super powerful. And then all you need to do is get a few from East Malaysia, and you've got a very solid majority, right? So this structure means that leaders, politicians, think in a certain way, they strategize in a certain way, and they speak in a certain way. So unless you have a structural shift in the way that the country is structured, in the form of its political system, this issue will persist. Now, there are three things that are modifying this picture somewhat. Mm-hmm. And the first is that you are having increasing numbers of Malay voters living in urban areas that think less, that think differently, and that, you know, are talking about the quality of public transport, the quality of public services, the kind of more traditional governance issues that, you know, many of us in the Klang Valley and urban areas talk about. And secondly, and relatedly, you also have a growing number of Malay voters that are registered in rural areas, but they live in urban areas and they return home to vote. So when they return home to vote again, they are tended to, or they are immersed in a different context with different issues. And the third is that the proportion of Malay voters is increasing over time. And the proportion of voters that are Chinese Malaysian, Indian Malaysian are shrinking. So if we fast forward 25, 30 years, this is a country that could be 33/4 to 80% Malay, in which case this ethnic classification is less useful. You can't talk about, ethnicity anymore. You can't rely just on that. And we're beginning to see the effect of this because you're having a growing number of Malay parties.
And on the topic of racial politics, is there an explanation for why the Indians in general seem split down the middle?
Okay, of course, over time, as I just mentioned, the proportion of Indian voters is decreasing. And also, it is a demographic that is not so concentrated. So you actually have, you know, many, I think there are about 30 or 35 constituencies in Peninsular Malaysia that have, you know, a sizable Indian community, but nowhere is it more than 20%. It's 5%, 10%. So it's kind of very spread out. So it's not easy to cater to this community as a specific block that enables you to net like 5 seats, for example. So that's the first thing. And if we look sort of in the future, I think that this trend will continue. But I think if we look historically, I think we can see that there's a little bit of a different trajectory when we compare the Indian community with the Chinese community. And that is, you know, very broadly, the Chinese community has traditionally been largely, but not exclusively, urban. Now, in contrast with the Indian community, you have one part of the community that has been present in urban areas for a long time. But you also have a large part of the community in rural areas. And actually, 50 years ago, 2/3 of the Indian community lived in rural areas. And the political form of representation that this group used was through the Malaysian Indian Congress, which was part of BN. Now, over time, what has happened is the percentage of Indians living in rural areas has fallen. And in 2010, it was actually only 20%. And so over time, you know, you've had a change and the means of representation has changed. You've had a shift away from MIC, but you still have a legacy of BN-style politics in rural areas, as well as some select urban areas that have large numbers of people that have moved from plantations and rural areas relatively recently. So that's kind of why you have that dichotomy. You have a well-established urban community, as well as a larger, well-established rural community that is shrinking over time.
So one thing I've seen a lot of people focus on is how Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's approval rating is at a very healthy 69%. However, one thing that not many people are really touching on is how even Muhyiddin's approval rating has dropped from the mid-70s in May or June to the 69% it is now. Why has his approval rating dropped over the course of this past 6 months or so?
So first, I think we need to recognize that this is, regardless of whether it's gone down a little bit, a very high level of popularity, although it is actually lower than Mahathir's popularity rating at a similar stage in his tenure. And there are a couple of potential reasons. The first one is, of course, politicians enjoy honeymoons and they come to an end. You know, that's the reality of politics. Novelty wears off. And it has also been a tough period with COVID and the difficult economic situation. And then potentially the initial rush of liquidity released into the economy by the government is wearing off. There could also be another factor, and that is the carping between the Perikatan Nasional coalition partners. So as we know, people became tired of the Mahathir Anwar struggles. You know, you had similar issues surfacing in government, particularly from UMNO over the timing of the elections and whether Mohyuddin Yassin would be the PM candidate. So I think, you know, it's not a big dip, but it could be a reflection of people questioning him, questioning his stability after a period of time.
And do you see Perikatan Nasional losing popularity the longer we wait?
Well, perhaps there could be a bit more attrition over the coming months due to the economic downturn and internal coalition fighting. But of course, you know, politicians and national leaders do have a certain element of agency. And there are a number of things that can boost Mohyuddin's standing. So the first is we have the Sabah state election. And if Perikatan Nasional does well, if they're able to topple the state government and secure it, this could put wind in his sails. Second, I think we're going to see a very generous budget when it's tabled in November. And this will help boost its popularity. I think it will be billed as, or it will be interpreted as an election budget, even though it is not. And then you're also going to have the release of the 12th Malaysia Plan in January 2021. And this will provide a bit of a vision, a bit of a theme for the Mohyuddin Yassin administration. So these things could boost on the offside. And last, and this I think is really one we should be watching out for, is if he can snag a few more MPs from other parties, and particularly from Pakatan Harapan, encourage them to cross over. Now, this is difficult, as many of the really nice positions have already been given out, and his administration is seen as unstable. But if he can get a few, this would increase his majority and allow him to avoid the perception of being weak. And this, I think, also would pay off.
Unfortunately, we are running a little short on time here. So, Francis, before I let you go, is there anything else that you found fascinating about the study that you'd like to bring up?
Well, I certainly think the most entertaining or impactful one actually is more micro. And actually, that's the last question on the Merdeka Center survey. And that pertains to Najib Razak. And certainly, you know, we can see there, or rather, you know, if we take a step back, of course, following his fall from power, you know, very much he's had a resurgence in popularity. He's very well, you know, represented in social media. There's a campaign, you know, very well orchestrated social media campaign. And this, you know, leads people to talk about a potential comeback. Nonetheless, if we look at this, you can see that 61% of respondents agreed with the guilty verdict. In particular, you can see 57% of Malays. But more particularly, let's look at the number that explicitly disagree. Only 19% explicitly disagree with the guilty verdict. So I think this actually gives us a different picture. And this sort of perhaps puts forward the hypothesis that his support is not nearly as widespread as people think. And I think that this would also lead to a certain amount of soul searching within about the way forward.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me today, Francis.
A pleasure. Thank you very much for inviting me. And I enjoyed our discussion very much.
That was Dr. Francis Hutchinson, who's a political analyst and the coordinator of the Malaysia Studies Program at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute. And we were discussing the findings of the recent survey done by Merdeka Center, which indicates that most Malaysians are pretty much satisfied with Muhyiddin Yassin and the Perikatan National Government. Well, if you missed any part of this conversation or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can check out our podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or on Spotify. Once again, I'm Dashran Yo, and this has been Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.